Well, respect is what you get from the Progressive Radio Network. And ladies and gentlemen, as we continue our efforts to help you, to inform you, to educate you, and help you get medical care, Dr. Gary Noel, who sponsors this radio network and the program, has got another article that's just come out. And he's putting together part two, which will come out in the next few days, and all of you can get a hinder and understand what has transpired. Well, it's 25 years ago to the day when Operation Desert Storm started. It started in the evening of the 24th, launched into the 25th, when the full ground invasion was launched from Saudi Arabia into Iraq and to Kuwait. So we want to remember all of the members, all of our individuals that have lost their lives out of my unit. That's Mad Dog and Blue and Kiefer and Sitton and Zuli and Orel and Andres and Tom, and I can go on. Those are the guys who were part of Bowers Raiders, part of the DU team that all lost their lives. And it's been a nightmare. We're still trying to get medical care and everything. So let's talk about war. Let's talk about memories. Let's talk about what it means. Ray, are you with us today?
I am. Good to be with you, Doug. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. I mean, when you and I were communicating as we got this all back and forth, Ray, you sent an email to me that tied it all together. We're still hoping for the dreams. We're hoping our leaders will do it right. We're hoping the VA will come out of their, I don't know how to even describe it, fraud, waste, and abuse. We're hoping the DOD would come out and do what's right. We're hoping that everybody would clean up the environment so we have any more catastrophes. But those are all hopes and dreams. And you emailed me and you said something about God. And could you explain what you mean, Ray?
Well, you know, I'm a great believer. Well, like you, Doug, we're both believers in God, and God is very real to me. And once in a while, God shows up. And I mean, he does it all the time, but sometimes God will show up. And, you know, what we were talking about was that people can deny, people can avoid, people can just turn their eyes and pretend like they didn't see it or they didn't do it. But there comes a period of time when God shows up, and then he has the last word of this thing. People will come to their senses at one point or time, and I hope they do it real soon, Doug, because there's a lot of lives that have been lost from the Gulf War, and there's a lot more being lost just by people living in denial and saying, I don't know what you're talking about. And God will have the last word on this, whether we like it or not or whether we believe it or not. So it will happen.
I think that's real true. I mean, day by day, we try to get our medical care. I mean, we had the individuals from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Choice on this program over a month ago with Patricia Axelrod and myself. And then when I went, as you know, went to get my own medical care over 4 weeks ago now from the Choice program, that totally fell apart. And as of last night, they still hadn't fixed it to get me my own personal medical care, much less anybody else.
Right.
I mean, Sergeant First Class Rollo Dolph, my sergeant, who I've been with since 1977, and we enlisted in the Army together in 1980 and did all the stuff in Iraq and everything else, cleaned up all the mess. I mean, I had to call Bob McDonald's office, actually talk to his secretary on in voice, not a phone message, not an answer machine last Friday, and he did get his care on Monday. I was over at the Danville VA when he got his care. And so he was happy, but my God, it took pulling strings beyond comprehension. And day after day, as you know, we run into the roadblock where these kids can't get proper care.
Right.
They don't have the backup situation. They don't have the pastor to call to. We're seeing that in the Desert Storm victims and the families. And as you said, you and Johnny are seeing it horribly at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
We are, and we see it all the time, and they keep coming back like that. And so, you know, the casualties continue to mount. And, you know, the people that could do something about it and should do something about it are insulated from a lot of this. You can't get to them. And so they live in kind of an insulated world. And the people that you are forced to deal with, Doug, probably have no clue to how to fix this thing or even how the problem came about. When I've read some of the materials you have written and other people have written, it just very eye-opening to me, and it grieves my heart that you guys are having to suffer like you're suffering. And I guess the biggest suffering is the isolation of saying who was in charge, and nobody was in charge, and nobody knows what to do. And now they're either gone or they're just not speaking. And I know it's very frustrating to you, and I'm very sorry about that. It was a story most Americans have never heard that, Doug, because nobody talks about it. And you're one of the few. And eventually, if you continue on, and especially if the Gulf War Memorial comes up, there's going to be more people talking, more people coming out of the closet, more people revealing what went on and who was behind it all. And eventually, I do believe it's going to help. But in the meantime, the casualties are still mounting. And, I just feel terrible about what has happened.
Yeah, I mean, Gary has written his first part, and he's written the second part. And we'll be talking about that next week on this radio show. But let's go back to what started Desert Storm. I mean, we did a bait and switch with Kuwait, allowing them to tap into oil, the oil pipeline coming out of Iraq, to do slant drilling in there in order to get to a bait and switch Iraq to invade Kuwait. And then we said, told Iraq we wouldn't do anything, and then we launched in a massive, massive military force.
Right.
Now, throughout the 1980s, as the documents prove, and again, this is the United States Senate report, the Regal Commission report verifies, Iraq absolutely had the chemical and biological weapons to include weaponized anthrax because the U.S. Army sent it to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we wrote U.S. Army Field Manual FM8-285, Medical Management Chemical and Biological Casualties, and that's how Bauer's Raiders, our team under Colonel Ulrich Bauer and Colonel Andres Corney Bach and Colonel Thomas Little, were able to teach the Medical Management Chemical Biological Casualties course in theater to the command staff and to everybody else that needed it in the refresher course.
Yeah.
And then we all got zapped because there was not enough anthrax vaccine. We absolutely had to give it. They didn't have enough, and it was an experimental vaccine. The vaccine they had came from Bioport in Michigan. It was percutaneous anthrax, not respiratory anthrax. And then they laced it with squalene to get enough doses. In other words, 100 to 1. I think it's something like 100 to 1. So if you use alum as the adjuvant, you got one dose. If you use squalene, you get 100 doses. And we didn't have enough, so we prorated it who it went to, and the guys who were on the front line didn't get 3 doses, and the rest of us got our butt shot full of it.
Right, right. Well, you know, I think it's always been the history of Iran and Iraq both that they've always fought each other in some way or form. But I think we chose, and the enemy of my enemy became my friend. And so we began to sell arms to our friend, which were fighting our enemies. And then later on, they became our enemy too, and they had all the weapons that we gave them and sold to them. And now we're having we had to fight them with our own weapons.
And that's happened again because as the 3rd U.S. Army Captured Equipment Project, and I wish I'd never got involved, but I got involved in that too, under General John A. Guest, I mean, those were all the Iraqi weapons collected. We started shipping them, handing them out to everybody else. We did hand them out to friends at our time who are now our enemies. And as everybody knows and the reports are confirmed, when we then start giving them back to the Iraqi army and the Iraqi Kurds, they're going, wait a minute.
Right.
You were shooting us and destroying us with your arms you gave to them. Now you're giving us arms and you expect us not to shoot you? So now we know where ISIS got all their weapons.
That's right. I mean, if you look at what they're driving and it's our tanks and our Humvees and everything else. I mean, we've really furnished the Middle East with weaponry that belonged to us. And from one time to time, we gave it to certain people that were friendly to us, and we wanted something from them, and so that's what we left behind, the footprints of America. I love America, but we've been all around this world, Doug, and we've left our footprints everywhere.
I mean, the catastrophic effects from all the contamination, when we release all the contaminants, we get all the hazard materials from any military force that's moving, and I mean, we have to understand, we're looking at 1 million men with all the combined forces and everybody on the U.S. side, and then, 1 million on the Iraqi, and we destroyed everything. So now you had all the hazard materials from the operations, then you release all the hazard materials from chemical, biological, agricultural, and academic and industrial sectors in Iraq and Kuwait, contaminated everything. Then we used depleted uranium, which there is absolutely no excuse for. I mean,
right.
When Schwarzkopf told me to clean that up and gave me the memo saying how bad it is, and then General Franks gave me the memo, the Los Alamos memo, and told me to lie in my reports to avoid all liability, health and environmental effects, the moral injury has never healed and it never will.
Well, you know, Doug, I have worked with police departments and stuff, and I love police officers. We have to have them to hold, you know, to keep the law and everything. But we know for a fact that there's been some bad ones along the way. And there used to be some that carried extra weapons with them or extra drugs with them, because if they got into a bad situation, they found out they made a mistake, they had to cover themselves. And so they would use certain things to do that with. They would plant drugs if they had to, just to get them out of trouble. And I know that's a whole different thing what you're talking about. But they found out they had made some mistakes, and what they did, they tried to cover them up, and they just caused more damage in the Middle East. And you guys are still suffering from some of those flashbacks or some of those things that happened to you over there. And also, they shouldn't have been there. It shouldn't have been happening, but it happened because they were trying to cover themselves. Now, at least I think so anyway.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. It's just, where do you send? Because when we sent out the medical directions, sent out the medical orders, and put all together, we figured, okay, this is going to be easy. Everybody's going to be able to obtain their medical care. It's not going to be a problem.
Right.
We taught how to do it. We passed all the information out. You can get a hold of the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs documents to verify all the Gulf War illnesses and all the health effects. And that's the same as with Agent Orange.
Right.
And we have the Zumwalt report confirming all the problems with Agent Orange, and yet we still have Vietnam vets that can't get proper care for Agent Orange exposures.
Right. You know, during the Gulf War, they mobilized just about the entire military, too, everybody they could. National Guard, reservists, everybody was mobilized. I don't think when they began to go into the Middle East, from everything that I could see, Doug, is that they realized this was a big piece of cake they were going after, and this was a world-class army that Iraq had. And like you said before, they had 100,000, we had 100,000 body bags ready for our troops, because we were going into a massive army. And so I don't even think they considered about the repercussions about after war. They were too focused on getting people over there. And they got them over there, and, I mean, inundated with the military, and the war only lasted a short time. And then all of a sudden, they're stuck with all these guys coming back, men and women both, that are suddenly having problems. And I think it overcame the government. I don't think they ever considered all the ramifications of what was happening. And now they're stuck trying to fix this thing, and it's just a massive, massive problem.
I got an email earlier from a retired Army medical officer. He's still fighting like mad for medical care for everybody. And at the end of his email, he says, quote, "I'm afraid the hour's a bit late for me,
right,
but if the efforts my team has made leaves a legacy, then I've done God's work," end quote.
That's amazing.
And that gentleman has still been fighting for care, because earlier today I've been on the phone with the editor for the Kuwaiti Times and working with them and trying to get information to them to ensure medical care is there and the environment is cleaned up according to the regulations that I wrote for General Shinseki, which have been adopted and mandated, but they've ignored. And, you know, when David comes down and says this, and he was over there himself and he did a lot of stuff, and then after the war, he's gone on to get an incredible education and dedicate his life to environmental toxicology. But the email, I mean, I just got this a couple hours ago.
Right.
"I'm afraid the hour is a bit late for me, but if my efforts and my team has made leaves a legacy, then I've done God's work."
Yeah, well, you know, it's part of disclosing and bringing to light certain things. I mean, God, you know, this is my take on God. He is light, he is love, he is mercy, he is good. And the problem with mankind, we have a choice to make. We can either do good or evil. And God does not mess with that choice, because love determines choice. If you love somebody, they have choices. They're not a mechanic, they're not a machine. And when people do those things and do bad, there will come a time, Doug, they have to own up to what they've done. And I hope they won't wait until the end, until they're gone, before they have to own up. I wish they would today and help some of these guys at least admit the mistakes. And America could apologize. I mean, they could apologize, and maybe America would forgive. But, you know, most Americans were never aware of what was happening to you guys. We thought we won a war in 3 days, and God had really been magnified in that. And then you were coming home, everybody go back to work, and everything was like supposed to be. And today, after 25 years, nobody even thinks about the Gulf War anymore. It's not in the newspaper. It's nothing really, a lot of articles and magazines. Nobody really knows about it. We thought it was a war bygone and gone by. And so it's really, you're digging up sand where people are saying, well, what are you doing this for? Why are you rehashing all these problems? Why are you digging it all up? And the reason is it never went away. It just kind of disappeared in plain sight. And your job, and I think God is using people like you, Doug, to revive it in a way so light can be shown on those dark places. And I appreciate what you're doing, Doug. I really do. I admire you for that.
All right. Thank you, Ray. I mean, when we think about it, the catastrophe we left, I mean, the majority of those that were wounded in action and killed in action during Desert Storm, both U.S. military forces, the British and the coalition, as you know, were friendly fire.
Right.
They were shot up by our own troops using depleted uranium munitions from either the Abrams tank, the M60, or from the A-10. And so
right.
That horrific consequences, and then the orders to lie and deny care, even though the internal memos totally confirm the health effects and direct medical care, is astonishing. And then when we look at the chem-bio weapons, which they used to launch Operation, you know, Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom again, knowing that they had been provided by the U.S. and that they had all been destroyed, so there was none left, which is what the, you know, what we proved, what the troops did prove once they got in Operation Iraqi Freedom, which was another whole shenanigans, we're just into a catastrophic health effects. So now we have well over 300,000
yeah.
of Desert Storm veterans. That's at over 50% that are now seeking medical care from the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, according to their own documents. And when we go to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, we're looking at 1.5 million of American veterans alone seeking medical care. And the health effects are catastrophic diagnostic codes as confirmed in the Department of Veteran Affairs' own medical reports. And yet the doctors deny any correlation between the health effects and the exposures, and they deny the exposures happen. And for me, trying to get in the Airborne Hazards Registry Program, they're claiming that I never deployed and I was never there.
Well, you know, you kind of disappeared in plain sight too, Doug, and that kind of does them good because, you know, I've worked with the VA for 15 years. I mean, I've been with the VA for 15 years. I didn't go for 32 years before, you know, from the time I left Vietnam, the time I went to Gulf, I went to the VA. And they were wonderful to me. They've really been wonderful. But they made some mistakes along the way. And medical mistakes are not like a little mistake that you make during the day on the way to work or something. The VA, when they make a medical mistake, it has long-term consequences to it. And we both discussed these things before. You've dealt with the VA. And I think their major problem is they're being overwhelmed by people they never figured would ever be coming to them. They were in the military, but, you know, I have places on my arms and on my face and all that was caused by Agent Orange. And I know a lot of people that have died the same exact things that I have, only I've been very fortunate. And the good Lord has kept me around for hopefully some good reasons. And maybe this is one of them, just being on the show with you, Doug, is that but a lot of people have died from those things, and it was through a lot of mistakes. They were not thinking or something. But you would think people in charge would consider a lot of things. When my company, well, my platoon actually was wiped out, this is a very minor thing when I tell you this, Doug. When I'm looking at the Gulf War, this is minor what I'm talking about. But when my platoon was wiped out, we went up against a battalion of North Vietnamese that were on a hill, and they were bombing them during the daytime, or, you know, F-4s and things were dropping napalm on them and everything else. We could hear the enemy shooting at them, so we knew whatever they were. They were within a few hundred yards of the demilitarized zone, so they could have gone back over there had they had a break to do it. But it was during a week of full moon. And somehow, somebody never figured that out. They never, I thought when you would make a strategy for attacking something, you would always consider the natural elements and the moonlight and all these type of things, because the enemy can't move in bright moonlight. It was almost like day. You could read a newspaper. And so we went up against a wall out there, and nobody figured it out, or nobody intervened, or nobody warned us that the enemy could not move, so there would be about 600 over there instead of 50. And we walked into a beehive, and they ate us alive. And the thought was always remaining with me was, why didn't somebody figure this thing out before we went over there? And if you blew that up into about 1,000 times, you would see a lot of things in the Gulf War where a lot of things were happening, and commanders were not, I guess they'd never been there before. It's one thing to do things in the States and practice and play war and stuff. But when you get into the real thing, there are high consequences to that. And we could see it time and time and time again where people were just not thinking on the long term of these things, and now it's coming to roost.
Well, in your book and your story after your unit was wiped out, I mean, you talk about the fact that you were lost yourself. You were, you know, missing in plain sight, as you said.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's right.
They put you back there, and instead of sending you out for medical care and sending back for psychological help, they just reinserted you and you guys into another unit. So now you had a unit that had cohesion that got wiped out, and now as individuals, you got sent all over creation until, you know, the bad day happened again, and you had to medevac
exactly.
out.
They had a plan where they were going to have a drawdown, and the drawdown was supposed to be if you'd been in Vietnam for 6 months, you were part of that drawdown. Well, our battalion was one of the first ones to be drawn down because they had been in Vietnam for such a long time, one of the first units in. Not me, but it was units rotating back and forth, but our unit had been there for about 5 years, and so we were going to be one of the first ones. But at the last moment, they said that 1st Marines had taken a lot of casualties, and they wanted some experienced troops instead of troops coming, you know, new troops. And what they did was they just never told anybody, but what they did, they split us up at the very end of our tour and sent us all over Vietnam. And we became, you know, parts of other units throughout Vietnam. And we basically disappeared in plain sight. In California, we heard and read that later on they had a parade at Camp Pendleton, and where our flags, our battalion flags, and all these other flags in the division were being hoisted, and they were marching. There were thousands of Marines were marching, and the media thought it was us, and we were still in Vietnam. One of the amazing things, Doug, if you looked at the numbers in those days, it was supposed to be numbers of military coming home. But the numbers of Vietnam never changed. And that tells you something was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, the horrific part of it, and we've talked about this because this is psychological impact again. When our fathers came back from World War II, they came back intact as a unit. They had a month or whatever it was, or several
right.
months, to recruit and resettle and get reoriented. And then when you and I both came from Vietnam, it was kind of like, hey, you pack your bags, get on a flight, and go home.
Right.
You know, in 24, 36 hours after you came out of combat, you're sitting back home in Vietnam. And then we did the same thing in Desert Storm. But at the Desert Storm, we had not only the active duty, but incredible numbers of National Guard and reservists
right.
got activated. And so we came out of combat. You know, came out of a nightmare. We're all sick. We were extraordinarily healthy. Went over, came back sick. Never got our care. And then we were dumped right back into the community with not so much as a Heidi Hill and a thank you again.
Exactly. And I know that when, you know, they talk about a 3-day war. Well, but you guys were gone for months at a time. It only lasted, but you guys were preparing. You were being equipped. You were doing all these things and preparing, you know, ways of attacking and all these different things, training. But you were gone for quite a long time. And when you came back home, it was 30-some hours, you know, coming back with mass transportation. But your life has changed in that process. And I know some guys that came back and their wives have gone somewhere. Their wives have taken over jobs. Their wives have taken over running the family. It was hard to come back in that family again, and as a husband or a leader or a wife, and to reincorporate back into that family, because that family had almost moved on without you. And you're coming back, and everybody's like, well, thanks a lot, dude, and that's it. And the military was cutting you loose, and then all of a sudden, your life has changed, and there's been no decompression, there's been nothing. And now, it takes a little time, Doug. I know for a fact that when you come back, but I said in my book, too, I suddenly learned that there was two parts of me. There was two of Ray Clark's. One of them was trying to act normal and looking normal because I had no pride, I guess. And the other one was dying on the inside. And I think most warriors that go to war like that come back. Life has changed. It's moved on. The culture has moved on somewhere. And then you come back and expect it to just fall right back in and take up. But you're months or years behind the average person, because you have left all that behind. Your body has been in trauma. You knew you were going to die, and suddenly you didn't have to die. But you still went through all those emotions of putting yourself out there to die. And they were very real to you. And now you're trying to cope with it. And those guys are still trying to cope with that kind of thing.
You know, when U.S. Air Force, retired U.S. Air Force flight nurse Captain Joyce Riley did Beyond Treason, the documentary, it opened up the world for everybody else, because she provided not only the talking voices and the experts, but she provided all the documentation on from Agent Orange all the way through all the chem bio, all the depleted uranium, all the hazardous materials and everything. Not that created by the soldiers, but that be created by the government that they didn't want to know.
Right.
Now Gary Noe, God bless him for this radio program and the Progressive Radio Network. I mean, he's had multiple documentaries that you can get, you know, going to GaryNoel.com and watch those documentaries. And now he's written part one of an incredible new report that was just released in the last 72 hours, with the second part coming. We'll talk about it next week on this show. But describing a horrific nightmare that should have never happened, because at some point, those responsible for taking care of the troops forgot their primary duty was to take care of the troops after they did their duty.
Exactly. That's a fundamental type of thing. It's like we said before, General Westmoreland said, if you're not going to welcome them home, don't send them. But on the other hand, yeah, you welcome them home, but that's where it ends. You go back, and there's no decompression. There's no re-entering society. And, you know, I don't think when you have a country that has been at war for since Vietnam, well, actually Vietnam started, I think they've only had 15 years of not being in another country fighting somebody. And so I think war should be an isolated event for most nations, but to us it's become a way of life. And now we have generations of warriors on our hands. And these guys deserve to be not only thanked, but taken care of, their physical, emotional needs. Because war is probably the worst thing that could ever happen to an individual. Wherever you were in Iraq, or wherever you were in Vietnam, or wherever you were in Korea, you were probably in enemy territory, somewhere, somehow. And they always have negative effects on the human spirit and the human psyche and everything. And, you know, God has been probably the greatest neutralizer of things in my life, because when I came to Jesus Christ, he fixed a lot of things in my life as far as peace and happiness and things. But the emotional side of me, God has actually put me in therapy with real doctors and things to try to help me psychologically. Because when you go to war, it changes people, and it can't help it. It's just the way it is. And all these warriors need at least to be checked out and find out if they can be helped in some way, because they're dealing with life by themselves, and that's not good, Doug.
I think the difference, and we've talked about this before from our own experience, you had a whole new group of warriors that don't have the education, they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the experience. They've got all the social, cultural, and family problems when they came into the military. they had more developed while they're in the military, and when they keep going back and they'll come back and have another deployment, come home for a few months, have another deployment, come home and have another deployment, and then come back and do it again, and they're physiologically non-deployable because we don't have the adequate troops. We got to redeploy individuals that should be medically discharged.
You can't
so
do
it's
that,
all
Doug.
Screwed up. And then this whole idea, which was different in our father's generation and even Vietnam, your military job doesn't prepare you for a civilian employment. I mean, the civilian world, unless you go into the police force, and God forbid they don't even need it, you don't need an infantryman.
No. No. But then, they, you know, all aspects of the military, you're dealing with a lot of aspects of war. You may not go, but you know everything that's going on. And there's a certain amount of tension and stress that goes along with those jobs and even trauma. I was in McDonald's a while back, and I was getting ready to do a book signing, and I had my book there, and I was writing some things down. A young girl at McDonald's was wiping tables, and she came over to me. She's about 16 and 17 years old. And she said, "What are you reading?" And I told her what it was. I said, "I've written a book." And she said, she started crying. She said, My daddy went to Iraq 8 times and said he's been in combat, and said, "My daddy is so messed up now you wouldn't even recognize him. He's turned into a monster." And I was able to get a book to that guy, and I was able, and she said he reads military books trying to find help. And so I sent him a book, and I sent him some literature, and I prayed with her right in McDonald's. I didn't care who looked. Who cares, man? We're in a life-and-death situation here, Doug. We're losing people constantly. And the other day when I went into the VA last week, when I was walking in, there was a young girl coming walking out, and she was approaching me. And I noticed she was a right pretty girl, but she had a look on her face like, I don't know, just very depressed. And so we got close to each other. I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And she was like, "Hey." I said, "Were you a veteran?" She said, "Yeah." And she busted out crying. And I ended up hugging on that girl right out there in that parking lot. And I said, "Can I pray with you?" And I prayed with the girl. And I just said, "God, please give her peace. Give her help. Help people to help her." And it's the only thing I could do for her, Doug. But I'm telling you, we have to look out to these veterans and find out the ones that are hurting so bad and do something. I think in the Bible, John talked about, he said, "Silver and gold have I none, but what I have, I'm going to give you." And anytime we can get help to these people, we need to do it, Doug. You're talking about doing God's work. You're doing a great work by getting these guys to help. And whatever kind of help they get, maybe it'll grow into a normal human being again. That would be wonderful.
I mean, the capability, I think, as you know, 2 weeks ago Monday, we buried another one of our colonels, God bless him, Lieutenant Colonel Kenneth Doc Ronke, U.S. Army, retired. I mean, he was the Green Beret. I mean, he was everything. He went to Korea as a young puppy where he could barely shave, and then went back to Vietnam as an A-team, and then stayed in, and we were in the same unit together. And then because of all his expertise, he came back and opened a medical practice and air ambulance and ground ambulance here in East Central Illinois, before anybody even dreamed of it. And he just died at the age of 82 when we buried him the other day. But I was able to drive through a snowstorm and get there, put on my uniform, and give the military eulogy. But our Sergeant Rollo, he was too sick to go. And as we lose all these guys, and we hope to be there, and we hope to hold their hand and lead them on, we can't always be there. And so that hole in your heart is devastating, just beyond comprehension.
It is. And, you know, it's one of the words that I was studying a while back, and but one of the words popped out to me was a standard bearer. A standard bearer was a guy in the Civil War that would take the flag and run to the front of the battle. And that's where everybody, that's how they communicated. And people would rally around this guy. And the question was, where do the people go when the standard bearer falls? And they don't know where to go. And that just tells us that somebody's got to pick that flag up, or somebody's got to get up that standard, and they have to run with it. And there's not that many people, Doug, that are helping you out. And Denise and different people like that. And you know more than I do as far as people-wise. I mean, a lot of other ways too, Doug. I have to throw that in there. But you know there's not that many that is really holding a standard up of trying to get help to people, because the average person, and maybe even the person in the VA, he hardly remembers the Gulf War now. They're only about 30 years old, 35 years old, and they're thinking, look, man, the thing only lasts 3 days. You know, just shut up and go on. You're okay. They don't know what happened, and they don't know how many people are hurting. You know, I have places all over my arms that are Agent Orange, and you probably have the same thing. But I don't have to explain some of that stuff. Well, in the Gulf War, everything was so secretive and everything was going on behind the curtain that nobody really knows the true story of what was going on. And I appreciate people that are standing up, holding up that banner and saying, rally around me. And I do hope that memorial, when it comes about, will be a place where more standard bearers will gather and maybe something will get done.
I mean, Scott's doing an excellent job. I mean, we talked with him on our last radio show. It's in the archives.
Right.
So you can go back to that, and we had one previously with Denise and all of us, you know, when Scott got tied up in that meeting in Washington to get the memorial done. It's all there. But the other thing, too, when we look at the way military operations today and we look at the civilian environment, the whole environment, when we destroy and contaminate God's earth, God's planet, make all the people sick, make the children sick, it's not just a soldier that's sick, because it's that individual civilian, the non-combatant, whether they're be in Iraq or Kuwait or Korea or Saudi Arabia or Vietnam or Vieques, Puerto Rico or around Hawaii or in Central America, they're all affected horribly. And then we look at the incredible levels of contamination all around the U.S. military installations right here in the United States that nobody wants to deal with. I mean, here in Rantoul, the mayor is terrified that any time I'll bring it up and bring the documents out, and they're basically going to have to say, oh, my God, we can't clean this up, and here's what's still happening to everybody. We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's basically erect a fence and lock the gate and walk away.
That's true. You know, they talk about in third world countries, we lose about 1 million people a year to malaria, for instance. Some of the Oriental countries or Asian countries. But any country you go into, like a third world country, most of the time, there's going to be a lot of natural problems. There's going to be, a lot of water problems. And, you know, when the military, wherever they are, they're picking up stuff wherever they are, and they're bringing it back home again. So I think every person in the military, whenever they go out of this country especially, they ought to come back and be decontaminated. They ought to just check their blood, check everything about them, and find out, you know, what have you picked up, and try to get rid of it when they can do it early. Don't wait until all the symptoms begin showing up, because now you've got to fight it even harder. But I don't think they've ever done that, Doug, not to a big extent anyway. And we have a lot of veterans that are dealing with a lot of problems that, you know, they may not even realize what has happened to them.
I've seen so many veterans that came back and they were healthy one day, and then 2 weeks later or 2 years later, they've crashed and burned.
Exactly.
They didn't go for help until it was too late, and then they come screaming for help. I mean, I could play them right now off of my answer machine, and it would terrify everybody just to listen to the screams for help. But it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally, completely wrong. And in contrast, when our fathers, absolutely Hitler and the Holocaust and all of that, and Japanese and what they did in China and Korea, there's no way to describe that. That was a justified, essential type war.
Right.
But Korea and Vietnam afterwards, and especially Desert Storm and on since then, this stuff has all been about economic gain and power and greed and control of resources. I mean, that's what it's all about in Syria. That's what it's all about in Libya. That's what it's all about still in Vietnam.
Well, it is. And we go in and we rape them of their resources, and we build a McDonald's in every corner, and we think they got a good deal. But that's not, if you go over there, that's why Iran is so mad, because we did that to them, and we tried to justify it by the good things that we did for them, and they were like, I wish you just stayed out of our business, and they're mad now, and so we wonder, why in the world are they mad at us? We did so many good things for them. Well, we also did some bad things, too, and we've talked about that before. And if America stayed home more and quit trying to be the daddy of everybody, we would have a better country. We wouldn't spend as much, and we wouldn't have so many sick people in our country that have been polluted by being over in the third world countries and different places and then coming home with a wrecked life.
And now we're seeing the Zika virus. As you know, we exchange information. I'm part of a study group. And what we have confirmed with the Zika virus, again, that started because genetic-modified mosquitoes and everything got loose, and now that is going horrific across everything, and they're modifying another mosquitoes, and these endemic diseases are now genetically modifying themselves, so the mosquitoes are immune to the pesticides, which are downright dangerous.
Yeah.
And now these things are immune to the ongoing stuff with them.
Yeah. It's just more and more all the time, and it's costing more money. And so what people are doing now, they just deny the fact. And, you know, they say, well, we've got too many right now, so we're going to have to wait for a while to take care of your needs. And they'll put you off. Doug, like you talked about, they've been putting you off. That's the way a lot of things happen when the economy... When you don't have enough money to do what you need to do, you cut back in some areas, and you cut off non-essentials. And I think a lot of these veterans have become non-essentials. Their problem is not as big as somebody else's. So you were in a three-day war, quit whining, sit down, live a good life. You deserve it, and that's where they cut it off at. That's not the case.
You know, one thing that we've learned and we've talked about, you and I are firm believers, and we've been involved their whole thing in academia and training and education and getting troops going.
Yeah.
They can move on with their life. They can get an education. They can get academic and vocational training. They can get a good job, and they can lead a good life. But they got to make that conscious choice to do it and go out there and take the effort to get the education, whether it's both academic and vocational. And then they have to have the medical fortitude or the capability to be properly employed and get to work when it's necessary.
Right. Well, you know, Doug, I'm going next Monday. I'm going to be speaking to 115 junior ROTC students at a high school. And I'll be speaking all day, three different classes of ROTC students. And, sometimes I debate, what am I going to tell them? Do I tell them to pursue their military careers? What do I tell them? And the only thing you can tell them is to pursue the highest level of education you can get before you get there, because you've got a better chance of a better job. And then pursue any time you have a problem, you tell somebody about it. You try to get fixed before you get out, because you're going to get in line. And I truly believe, Doug, people waiting for their ships to come in as far as the VA. There's a lot of people died out on those beaches waiting for that ship to come in that probably will never come in. I have realized that ships don't go to shore. You might have to swim out to it. That means you're going to have to put some effort behind it. You're going to have to do some things for your own. You're going to have to swim on your own to get out to it. And I know it's a, you know, kind of a crazy thing, but that is exactly what people have to do. I tell these guys all the time, at the Marines and soldiers and people that I talk to, you cannot just wait for the VA to fix you. You're going to have to see what you can do for yourself in the meantime, because there's a lot of things you can be doing for yourself, you know, by education and by just learning how to adapt, improvise, and overcome. And when they do see you, you'll be a lot better off than waiting for them to fix everything. They're not going to fix everything for you, and you could lose everything you have while you're waiting. So be proactive. Move forward. You know, motivate your own selves, encourage your own self. And, you know, I always tell them to serve God. Take your family to church. It's the best place you can take your family, because you'll learn a lot of things about morals and life itself. And your children will grow happier, and just a lot of good positive things there. So we have to encourage them, Doug, to not just wait for the VA or somebody to fix them. They have to really do some work themselves and giving themselves a better chance for success in this thing.
I mean, well, here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, we have the veterans program there, and obviously, you know, I've been working with them. They got an opportunity. A veteran can come there as an undergrad or graduate school. They have a residence for severely disabled. They have all the support services. and they're doing incredible work there. I mean, Dr. Nick Osborne, who is a Coast Guard veteran, he's been on this program before. I mean, they got a program there to allow people to come that are severely injured and ill and get all the support factors and go through school. And, again, the scholarships are available, but we have to understand, and this is a problem for all of us, when you're physiologically injured, you've had brain trauma and everything, and you have physical problems with neuromuscular things, going to a classroom or studying is extraordinarily difficult. It can be done, but it's extraordinarily difficult, and you need a lot of help and everything else, yeah. And fortitude. And
you do. You have to push yourself. You know, they always said, you know, give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, teach him how to fish, and he'll feed himself for the rest of his life. And a lot of times we're dependent on somebody trying to take care of us. They're not going to do it. There's too many people now that want that. And what they're trying to, they even pay you to go to college in the military. And then afterwards, the VA and different people will, they have programs that you, if you will go and you may go to a tech school or community college or, you know, a larger college, but you'll be able to meet a dream and you'll be able to move forward. And although there's probably a lot of veterans working in the VA, I'm sure there is, and I know some of them, that are having problems their own selves, but they're working. They've got a full-time job. They're working for the VA. They've got some inside information once in a while. And so anything that will help you to move forward and be more productive, it will help you keep your family together, help you keep your mind together, it help you do a lot of things. Just don't lay around and wait for people to fix you, because you're probably not going to get fixed. You're going to do a lot of suffering. And, Doug, there's never been a day since the Gulf War. You probably haven't been affected by the Gulf War. But you didn't let it stop you, and so you moved forward. I took another track, and I did some different things. I tried to self-medicate. I tried to cope. I worked 2 and 3 jobs sometimes, and I was trying to live with life, and I wanted to die the whole time. I played with suicide hundreds of times. You know, thinking mainly. But, you know, we take different tracks, but both of us had the same goal in mind. That was to last as long as we could. And we're here today, not by accident, but because we tried to make some positive steps in our lives, and now, you know, we're here. And now we're telling these other guys, come behind me, do the same things. If you do the same things like Doug did, and Denise and different ones, and not let your past determine your future like I did, you'll have a better future. And it is working for these young guys.
And I think you mentioned the self-medicating. That's a real problem. The troops come back with all the problems, and they start self-medicating with either alcohol or they, you know, street drugs or whatever. Then they combine them with the meds are issued by their doctor, and now we got a problem. And when you have that lost cause, and it's real easy to self-medicate and drown yourself in the booze and the alcohol, but the pain only goes away for a few minutes until all the problems come flying back at worse condition.
They
so
are.
I guess, you know, again, we can make the suggestion, recommendation, and guide and lead and saying, don't quit drinking, don't use drugs, don't do this stuff. You know, use your prescribed medications as, you know, the doctor prescribes to be done. But that ain't happening out there. These guys are lost in the wind, and alcohol or street drugs are the easiest way to escape. That's been going on since then, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. And I agree with you. We give them information. We give them warnings. We tell them what's going to happen to them. But it comes down to a personal thing of where you have to want to get better. That's one of the first questions I always ask these guys. Do you want to get better? And I ask each one of them. And every one of them will say yes. Okay, well, if you're saying yes, then we've got something to talk about. So then you tell them about the dangers of mixing drugs and alcohol. And most of it's prescription drugs, like Dr. Billings was talking about last week, I guess it was, about these psychotropic drugs that they always put you on, Zoloft and just so many drugs. They lift my mind right now. But, you know, these guys are on these medications because they've been told they're good for them. But in the meantime, they're living in barracks or they're living in homes where people are trying to socialize and people are trying to have a happy life and a fun life and a modern life, and so they're drinking and they're doing different things. But when you do those things, when you mix those drugs together like that alcohol and you know, medication drugs, you're going to overdose before it's over with. You're going to do something. And if you don't die, Doug, it can alter your brain to the point that you will be useless the rest of your life. And so they don't realize all the repercussions of this. I'll guarantee you, at the hospitals where you live, they deal with suicide all the time, with people taking too much at one time, getting some bad stuff. I got some bad stuff one night. I got some marijuana. A guy wanted me to try some new stuff, and I tried it. But I didn't know it'd been mixed with PCP. And I hallucinated that night. My buddies came back to me from Vietnam, my dead buddies, and they wanted me to go with them. And I really wanted to be with them that night. And fortunately, I had a friend that walked me around until I sobered up a little bit. But that happens constantly, where these guys they go into a different world, a different state through all these drugs and alcohol. And when they're in that state, they're off there by themselves. They're not listening to you. The damage is being done. And if we don't learn how to get these people to make better choices, we're going to lose a lot more of them.
Now, at the same time, they have to have the support network. I mean, it comes down real simple. The VA just to acknowledge the health and environmental effects of the toxic exposures, acknowledge the person was there, provide them total prompt and optimal medical care without any hassles or arguments and everything.
Yeah.
And if they can't fix it, tell the truth, but then do something to optimize living capability within the restrictions of the medical problems they have. But ever since day one, there's been a delay and denial and refusal to accept that. And then, as you said, pass the buck has been the operational modus operandi for so long now, I don't think anybody knows who's responsible.
No, they're avoiding. And like you said, and I've read recently where people are calling the VA hotlines and suicide hotlines, and people will either put them on hold or they'll hang up on them. And what you're doing is putting a nail in the guy's coffin when you do that. He's already hurting. You don't know what he's going through. His wife or his spouse could be leaving. Could be losing his home, could be losing his job, or may not have a job. And nobody even cares. I mean, it's like, just hang up and walk away. There's another one out there. I can help him. But somebody's got to get to the point, Doug. We're talking about coming to yourself, and God is going to hold us responsible. We better start listening to our conscience and start listening to God, because we're losing all these people. And I don't know how a guy does when he hangs up on a man that's suicidal, how he lives with himself. It's got to come back at some point. And so you want to do better. And I think all of us can do better. And so that's what we need to strive for.
We lost Staff Sergeant Paul Lyons, who was co-host of this radio show, for that exact reason. He was fighting like mad for everybody. He was fighting like mad for his own medical care. He didn't get it. His wife was sick. His kids were sick. And as you know, when we all fought for him, he reached a breaking point where there was no return, and he chose suicide. And it's bothered all of us, and that's coming on. That was last March. It's coming up right now a year ago.
Yeah.
And now we're on the 25th anniversary of Desert Storm right now, as you and I are speaking. And it'll have passed, you know, with the end of the war, when this is broadcast on Sunday night. But the lessons haven't been learned.
No.
And the stuff hasn't been applied. And now we're losing an entire another generation. And we have multiple generations that are going to become sick because of the extensive Department of Defense contamination generated in warfare or generated by our weapons. And at some pace, we got to say enough is enough. I mean, Dr. Gary Noll has focused on that multiple times with documentaries. You go to the website and obtain those from him, and read his latest report that Part 1 came out and Part 2 will be coming out.
Yeah. Well, if people, just like in a suicide hotline situation, there may be a half a dozen people working that. Somebody has to take responsibility and hold people accountable and ask them questions and train them and say, look, you do not hang up on people. You get them help. If you can't help them, you find somebody who can. And so people have to just start taking responsibility for these things, Doug. And if you hold each other accountable and have a meeting once in a while and discuss problems and things coming up, they can be avoided, and you can help people instead of just putting them on just sending them off and live your life, or it don't matter. It does matter. Every life does matter. And anyway, I just wish people would get more responsible with these situations.
That's all we can hope and can dream, because, I mean, as we began this show and as you and I have talked personally one-on-one, and we both believe, at some point God's going to say enough is enough.
It is.
And there will be a horrendous accountability session that I think nobody wants to face.
No. We've never fell into the hands of an angry God, and I don't really want to anyway. I've tried to make peace with him, and I have. And, you know, and Doug, when we do that, that is a very powerful thing. We're not afraid of God. We love God, and that's powerful. But this world is going to pay, and our country, because of its past problems and sins, we're going to pay for this thing before it's over with. Every country that's ever survived, every democracy has always ended in a bad situation because they allowed their country to get really loose in morality and physical policies, or physical policies, and just everything. And now our economy is shot. Our military is so far down, they're almost non-existent. Everything is going on around us, and it should drive us to, somebody said one time, we're dying on our feet because we're not living on our knees. And I think God is calling America back to him, because we found out what it's like when you don't. And the problem we have today with our military is part of that problem, is that we have walked away from God, and we said, we don't need you no more. And, you know, here we are, Doug, here we are. But there is a solution. We call back. We do what we did in the Gulf War. Everybody come together and says, God, if you're real, if you're there, please help us. And God said, all you got to do is call on me, and I'll answer you. And that's for our nation.
You know, there's one thing in conclusion, we're at the last minute or so. One of my favorite hymns is Let There Be Peace on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
And it all comes down to it. I've told the story before. Peace has got to start with each one of us. It starts with me. It starts with you.
Exactly.
And I think that's where we have to go, Ray. Well, next week we're going to have a discussion on Dr. Gary Knoll's two-part series. He's just written on Gulf War illness and everything and the travesty that's been going on. Be sure to go to the website, prn.fm, listen to the radio show, get the information, get the documentaries. Learn and help us, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I think we're out of time, Ray. God bless you.
You too, and thank you, Doug, so much. I'm a chaplain, so you know what you're going to get when you squeeze me. And I just thank you for the opportunity, and I thank you for all the work you're doing, Doug.
Take care, Ray. God bless you, and good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you.